Abraham's other appearances on democracynow.org. That does it for today's program. Tomorrow, on Saturday night, April 6th, I'll be speaking in Berkeley, California, at KPFA's 75th anniversary celebration. It's at the First Church of Christ Scientists, a landmark building at 2619 Dwight Way. That's April 6th at 6:30 in Berkeley, California. Tonight, I'll be speaking in Ukiah, California. Go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a digital fellowship. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdo-Qaddous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to our director, Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO just finished our annual All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank all of our supporters for helping us bring the community engaging, unique, and all-around fun special episodes and killer marathons. We wouldn't be able to do it without you, our listeners. And if you missed out on any of our programming, you can check out the list of specials at kboo.fm/thrills.
Tune in every second and fourth Saturday night,
midnight to 3 a.m.
Sounds unsound. Sounds unsound.
Sounds unsound.
Only on KBOO.
Sounds unsound.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Mayor Ted Wheeler proposes a new camping ban after the last one was blocked by courts.
The scammer who stole $1.5 million from the Portland Housing Bureau is arrested.
And Oregon Democrats are being urged to vote uncommitted in the presidential primary. We speak to one of the organizers. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 5th, 2024. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Zoe Carina.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler proposes a new camping ban for the city after the last attempt was blocked by the courts. In 2023, city commissioners voted to ban camping, sitting, and lying on public property between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. and plan to fine violators $100 or send them to jail for 30 days. These restrictions were the subject of a class action lawsuit where plaintiffs say the ordinance failed to meet a standard of being, quote, objectively reasonable, as required by state law. A judge blocked the law from going into effect. The new version scales back from the previous iteration because it doesn't ban, quote, unavoidable activities like sitting, lying, or keeping warm and dry. Instead, it would ban camping on public property if the person has access to so-called reasonable shelter. Many unhoused Portlanders do not. The proposal would also ban people from using a propane heater or starting a fire. digging into the ground, or selling bike parts. It would also ban people from setting up a tent that obstructs access to a private business. City attorneys say that they think this version of the camping ban will pass legal muster, unlike the previous one. Mayor Wheeler told OPB, quote, "What this does is it gives us now some reasonable tools for people who just don't want to work with us. People who refuse shelter, people who refuse services, who dig in and say, nope, I'm going to continue to camp in this public right-of-way. We now have some actual law enforcement tools to be able to address those kinds of issues," end quote. Those who violate the ban three times would be fined $100 or spend a week in jail. The first reading of the new proposed camping ban will be at the City Council meeting on April 18th, and commissioners could vote on the ban as soon as the week after.
A case out of Oregon is soon to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court, and it could have a major impact on how cities treat homelessness. Oral arguments for Johnson versus Grants Pass are scheduled for April 22nd. The session concerns an ordinance in the city of Grants Pass that banned people from sleeping in public, including a prohibition on the use of blankets and pillows. Loren Naldoza is with Oregon Food Bank, which filed an amicus brief with 15 other organizations in the state in support of the plaintiffs. He says homelessness isn't a lifestyle choice.
It's an involuntary state of being because there have been systems or crises like our housing crisis, our cost of living crisis, or personal crises that are impacting people across the state that converge together and make it harder for people to stay stably housed.
The Ninth District Court ruled in favor of the plaintiffs that the Grants Pass law violates the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment. Supporters of the Grants Pass law say cities should be allowed to decide their own policies rather than the federal government. Naldoza says criminalizing homelessness is not an effective tool and would only create more hunger and poverty. He says people who exit the criminal justice system struggle in many different ways.
What you get at the end is a criminal record, which makes it harder for people who are formerly experiencing homelessness to find a safe, stable, or affordable place to call home. And it's also hard to get gainful employment, especially if the employment requires a background check or licensure.
Naldoza says there are more effective ways to address this crisis.
What we really need to be investing in is care and compassion and treatment and other resources that people actually need to exit their experience from homelessness.
That was Loren Naldoza from the Oregon Food Bank. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case of Johnson v. Grants Pass on April 22nd.
A woman in Florida has been arrested for the largest theft of public funds in Portland's history. 39-year-old Chantel Williams allegedly stole $1.5 million from the Portland Housing Bureau in 2022. She faces seven charges, including money laundering, conspiracy, aggravated first-degree theft, and identity theft. Court documents say Williams kept $70,000, that's 70, for herself before putting the rest in offshore accounts. Scammers posed as a worker from the nonprofit Central City Concern, sending emails to the Housing Bureau and getting over $1 million intended for low-income housing construction wired to the wrong bank account. City Treasury officials thought the transfer was fishy at the time, but the scam wasn't revealed until they tried it a second time. How did Williams spend the money? She bought a $25,000 car at a Hyundai dealership, pulled another $25,000 out in cash, and spent $2,000 at a furniture store. Williams attempted to convert the money into Bitcoin through a digital currency exchange, but when that failed, she sent the money to a bank account in Mexico. Williams remains in custody after her arraignment Thursday morning. City officials say they've tightened cybersecurity since the scam and that the Central City Concerns project was fully funded and completed.
A troubled jail in Clickitat County, Washington, is set to close this month following a 2-1 vote at a special meeting of the County Board of Commissioners. In her opening statement, Board Chair Lori Zollier indicated that poor management and ongoing safety concerns were at the heart of the decision. Zollier said, quote, "Clickitat County has a moral and legal obligation to provide a safe environment for people housed in our jail. The public has repeatedly expressed their concerns over the sheriff's inability to provide a humane and safe environment for inmates, end quote. Clickitat County Sheriff Bob Songer appointed Lauren Culp to administer the 49-bed jail in March of 2023. Both men have a long history in law enforcement and are members of the far-right Constitutional Sheriffs movement that claims state and federal authority as subordinate to the authority of sheriffs and local police. Earlier this week, Culp was notified by the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs that he is facing expulsion from the group for repeatedly calling county officials, quote, bitches, end quote, on social media.
Shortly after Mr. Culp started running the Clickitat County Jail, two well-publicized incidents highlighted what many considered to be failures to take proper care of vulnerable detainees. In May of last year, 24-year-old Ivan Hautapat died by suicide during fentanyl withdrawal. His family filed a lawsuit that named both Songer and Culp. In November, a woman who was being held at the jail was taken to the Clickitat Valley Health Hospital covered in bugs and showing signs of potentially fatal sepsis. Both Songer and Culp have blamed the jail's shortcomings on state-level policy. Sheriff Songer said that if the jail closes, which is expected in mid-April, he will find another position for Culp in the sheriff's office. The jail is in Goldendale, Washington, just across the river from the Dalles and the Northern Oregon Regional Correctional Facility, or NORCOR. Clickitat County already contracts with NORCOR to house their juvenile detainees and is expected to expand that contract to cover adults as well. NORCOR has had its own issues with keeping detainees safe and healthy in recent years, including a case from January of 2020, when 26-year-old Jennifer McLaren died of undiagnosed pneumonia after being taken into custody on a probation violation for a drug possession conviction.
Today, the Deschutes County District Attorney declared that a Bend police officer was justified in shooting an 18-year-old man after a vehicle crash on the Bend Parkway on March 20th, and also claimed that the cause of death was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police responded to the crash after a bystander called saying that the driver, Gabriel Platts of Bend, smelled of alcohol and had crashed after being seen driving recklessly at around 90 miles per hour. According to District Attorney Steve Gunnels, officers Wesley Murphy and Cody Leiter approached the car and saw Platts trying to pick up a handgun from the floor of the car. They ordered him several times not to pick it up. According to Gunnels, who cited body cam footage of the incident, Platts did pick up the gun and chamber a round. And Officer Murphy fired twice, even as Platts turned the gun on himself. The DA's declaration closes the official investigation into the incident, and a grand jury will not be convened. Platts' family has set up a GoFundMe for funeral and burial expenses. A Facebook post from 3 days after the shooting claims that the family had not been told any information that was not already public. Platts' death is the third fatal officer-involved shooting in Oregon this year, after others in Gresham and Portland in January. Three other people have been shot and wounded by police in Oregon this year and have so far survived. The most recent incident was just last night when a Boardman cop shot and wounded a man after a car chase. So far, neither the man shot nor the involved officer have been identified.
A civil rights report shows a historic spike in anti-American Muslim complaints. Advocates call for changes to capital punishment in Oklahoma, and President Biden calls for voters to reject political violence. With more on those stories, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We didn't create the dilemma that's out there right now, where 70% of America wants neither candidate, and we've got approval ratings at all-time low.
Mike Rawlings with the bipartisan No Labels group says they won't put forward a presidential ticket after failing to find a candidate. He says in spite of the unpopularity of President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, third-party efforts like those of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are pointless. During a tense call, Biden told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continued U.S. support depends on Israel's treatment of Palestinian civilians. The White House has not said it's reconsidering arms sales to Israel, however. Netanyahu also continues to face pressure at home. A key rival and cabinet member, the former General Benny Gantz, is calling for new elections there in September. The Council on American-Islamic Relations says anti-Muslim incidents in the U.S. rose by nearly 60% last year, higher than even after 9/11 or during former President Trump's Muslim ban. Corey Saylor is their research and advocacy director.
This is the largest number of complaints CARE has had reported to it in the organization's 30-year history since we've been taking care of numbers. That's pretty sobering information.
Most of the 8,000 incidents came after the Hamas attacks in Israel. In Oklahoma, Michael DeWayne Smith was executed by lethal injection Thursday, the 12th execution there since capital punishment resumed in 2021. Smith's family asked the governor to stop the execution. His sister-in-law, Nicole, says there was evidence of coercion of the witnesses during the trial.
We're asking the governor, have a heart. Please understand that this is a human's life that you're taking.
The Office of Personnel Management is issuing new rules to safeguard the civil service from presidential actions. Trump says if reelected, he'll strip thousands of federal employees of civil service protections by reclassifying them. Biden's campaign is calling on voters to disavow violence after Trump posted a video showing the back gate of a pickup with a photo of Biden hogtied on it. Former D.C. police officer Michael Fanone previously testified about the January 6th Capitol riot and says those kinds of attacks are bad for the country.
These are Americans who do not appreciate or understand democracy. These are people who believe wholeheartedly that the ends justify the means.
Meanwhile, a federal judge sharply criticized a January 6th rioter for downplaying the attack and normalizing violent rhetoric. Washington, D.C. District Judge Roy spoke when sentencing Taylor James Jonatakis to more than 7 years Wednesday. In a podcast, hard right Louisiana Congressman Clay Higgins says federal law enforcement entrapped people during insurrection. Higgins argues without proof that federal agents tricked Trump supporters into attacking the Capitol. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather, cloudy with a low of 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a daytime high of 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Today in history, in 1958, the Canadian government destroys Ripple Rock, an underwater mountain under the Discovery Passage in British Columbia, in one of the largest non-nuclear explosions of the time. It was designated as a National Historic Event in Canada because it was one of the first live, coast-to-coast TV broadcasts in the country. The quote of the day is from English philosopher Thomas Hobbes, born this day in 1588. He said, quote, "Such is the nature of men, that howsoever they may acknowledge many others to be more witty, or more eloquent, or more learned, yet they will hardly believe there be many so wise as themselves, for they see their own wit at hand and other men's at a distance."
This week, a growing Oregon coalition of more than 20 organizations and community leaders launched Uncommitted Oregon, a grassroots campaign to write in uncommitted in the May 21st Democratic presidential primary. Oregon will join more than 22 states and 600,000 voters nationwide in demanding a permanent ceasefire in Gaza with a protest vote. KBOO's Isabel Charlet spoke with Loie Abu Hussein from the Uncommitted Oregon campaign.
My name is Loie Abu Hussein, or as we call it in Arabic, Lu'ay Abu Hussein. I'm a Palestinian American. Obviously, there's a significant amount of loss of life due to the attack by the Israeli government on Gaza. And I personally have felt this kind of attack with my family. My sister-in-law, her uncle, three of his children, their respective wives, five grandchildren, all vanished with a single bomb. And we've tried walking in the streets, writing speeches, you know, to have him change course from supporting Israel, and in fact, having him stop supporting Israel and actively stopping this genocide that has taken place. But he has not, you know, heard his constituents, have not listened to the Democratic voters that are coming out in force asking for this to stop.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your about yourself and your personal experience. I can't imagine what it must be like to have been witnessing this.
Thank you. And I appreciate this. And it helps to hear our, you know, supporting brothers and sisters, Americans, Jewish, Latino from all over the world that are seeing this atrocity and they share our pain. You don't have to be a Palestinian to be moved by the situation that is happening right now. You have to only be a human being to be able to see the atrocities and be able to connect and have empathy and be able to say what's happening right there is wrong and we must stop it. Vote uncommitted. Right now, that's the only tool that we have.
And can you kind of just summarize what's the message you're trying to send to the Biden administration and why use this tactic?
So the ask is very simple. We are asking for a permanent ceasefire, not a temporary ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire. We are asking for the humanitarian aids to enter into Gaza safely and at the volume and urgency that is needed to save lives. And we're also asking to stop arming Israel. They are using these arms actively to commit genocide and ethnic cleansing. And America being the, you know, one of the major patrons of Israel would be able to stop this if they want to. The only way we can do it right now, we've tried all the other means and now we are left with our voice, our votes.
What do you say to people who might be scared that not voting for Biden could increase the chances of Trump being elected?
That's definitely a concern. I would look at it the other way around, though. Biden has to win our votes, not the other way around. We don't have to give him our vote. He needs to earn it. And he can't take our votes for granted. And there is no Palestinian, a person of conscience, that will look at what's happening there and America's complicity in this genocide and say, I want this.
Oregon is traditionally a blue state. Why does it feel important for Oregon voters specifically to vote uncommitted on May 21st?
If he can hear that the majority of Democrats in this Democratic state are not with him on this adventure on, you know, supporting genocide and supporting ethnic cleansing, that hopefully will maybe trigger something that will hopefully will let him know that even the secure states are not that secure after all. And he needs to win our votes. He needs to work hard to come to us, not the other way around.
Great. Thank you so much for giving me some of your time.
Thank you very much for taking the time and for amplifying our voices.
That was KABU reporter Isabel Charlet speaking with Loi Abu Hussein from Uncommitted Oregon. Oregon's Democratic primary is May 21st. In order to vote uncommitted in the primary, voters must register as a Democrat by April 30th.
South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem crashed a meeting between tribes and the federal government last week. Now the Oglala Sioux Tribe president calls her showing up a distraction. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe is reacting to the South Dakota governor showing up to a meeting between tribes and the federal government last week. The Pine Ridge leader says the Republican governor's actions were a distraction. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Last Friday, Governor Kristi Noem tweeted she felt it was important to show up at a meeting between various South Dakota tribes and the Biden administration. She says it was an important conversation as they discussed co-stewardship of the Black Hills. But tribal officials say it was a government-to-government meeting about Peshla, a mini prairie located in the center of the Black Hills that is considered a sacred site. The meeting was also about other sacred sites in the hills. Oglala Sioux Tribal President Frank Starr comes out, calls Governor Noem's appearance a publicity stunt for personal gain.
She wasn't on a schedule. She was, definitely wasn't invited.
Starr comes out, says tribes don't play the politics game.
For her to do something like that is not only unprofessional, showed no respect.
Starr comes out's criticism is about more than Noem's appearance at Peshla meeting. The potential vice presidential candidate has alleged Mexican drug cartel activity on several reservations and is calling for the federal government to audit the tribes. In a social media post, Noem said they can solve problems by talking. In the post, she reiterated an earlier offer to meet and work together on public safety. Starr comes out, says working with the tribes takes more than that.
The governor needs to realize that, you know, we're a sovereign nation. It requires consultation. It requires some time to set up for that consultation. And she needs to respect tribal nations.
The Oglala Sioux Tribe recently reiterated its ban on Governor Noem. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe also banned Noem from its reservation. I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
Zooming across the Navajo Nation, the nonprofit Indian Girls Book Club is bringing books written by indigenous authors to the reservation. KMBA's Hannah Bissett has more details.
So far, the tour has given out all of their books slated to hand out at each stop. They've completed three locations, all in Arizona. Their goal? To bring thousands of books to the nation.
So we have over 10,000 books that we're sharing at four different main stops in each direction.
That was Kinsale Drake, who is from Navajo Mountain, Utah. She's the founder and director of the NDN Girls Book Club. She says at each stop, they had a local medicine man present to ensure safe passage. The team also notified the local communities of their presence by working with vendors and using other means of marketing.
We have a big pinky truck that we also have zooming around the res right now, which has been so much fun. People are spotting it and honking and following it.
Drake says that their presence on the reservation is part of a mission to highlight indigenous authors. She says currently the Navajo Nation is considered to be a book desert by the United States, meaning there is a low likelihood of 100 or more books in the home. Drake says not only do they hope to show indigenous communities the works of indigenous authors, but also highlight the creation of these stories in terms of cultural repatriation.
There's so much there. You really just have to take the time to listen to a community and what they need, especially with historical context.
The book club distributes various genres, from children's books to contemporary works.
Success for us is measured in terms of community involvement and really seeing an increased joy and investment in Native literature.
The tour reaches its final destination on Friday in Shiprock, New Mexico. I'm Hannah Bissett.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Florida Supreme Court this week paved the way for a proposed constitutional amendment to restrict government interference with abortion, advancing it to the November 2024 ballot. Simultaneously, the court permitted the state's near-total abortion ban to go into effect in the interim. Tramell Gomes has the details.
Reproductive rights advocates see a silver lining in the Florida Supreme Court's recent decision. The court upheld a 15-week ban, and a 6-week abortion ban is set to go into effect next month. But it also cleared the path for voters to decide on an amendment that would safeguard access to abortion until fetal viability, typically around 24 to 28 weeks of pregnancy. Former Republican State Representative Carlos Lacasa joins a coalition of GOP figures supporting the amendment, including former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll. Lacasa emphasizes the importance of protecting both gun rights and privacy rights.
Because I believe that a woman's right to choose whether or not to carry a child is a very personal privacy matter. And as women's privacy rights go, so go all of our privacy rights.
Leaders of the Yes on 4 campaign hailed what they claim to be a bipartisan triumph, asserting that personal medical decisions should be between Floridians and their doctors. The Florida GOP chair expressed disappointment, labeling the proposed amendment as deceptively worded. The ballot measure would require approval from at least 60% of voters to pass. Republican supermajority in the Florida legislature enabled them to tighten abortion restrictions from 15 weeks to 6, starting in May. But LaCasa believes the ballot initiative might cause a backlash against the conservative agenda.
How much it will impact the election, I can't say, but it will definitely have an impact. It will definitely be more than 0 percentage point swinging towards Democrats, especially down ballot.
Governor Ron DeSantis is critical of the amendment and predicts its failure. Meanwhile, advocates for abortion access are gearing up for a Yes on 4 campaign launch in Orlando next weekend. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 5th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Isabel Charlet, Jasmine Moss, and Sam Bowman. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Tramell Gomes, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Zoe Carina. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to KBOO.